PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
Hello, you golfing legends, and welcome back to another episode of the original Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards, and joining me once again, coughing his way through the introduction, Mr. Dean DiCrescenzo, famous staff writer on THP. What's up, Dean? Welcome back.
Good to be back. And yes, at least I muted the microphone before I, you know, while I was coughing, so you couldn't really hear it. But, you know, for everyone now on video, they see me hacking up a lung.
They see the disappointment coming out of you. You're quick to click the mute button, which is unbelievable.
I am used to disappointing people, so no problem.
I mean, based on our discussions on social media recently and on the THP forums, I'm not sure if famous or infamous is the correct verbiage for you. I'm undecided at this point.
I mean, I don't know. I think of all of those videos that have gone out, it just proves that I have the best opinions and the most accurate thoughts of the three of us. Those have been really fun to do, by the way.
That's been ridiculous. If you haven't caught it, myself, Dean, and Ryan from the THP staff, just go into the weeds and just about everything you could possibly think about in terms of golf. All the questions you ask around the bar and see who's drunk enough to answer them is pretty much the route we've taken. And it's been a lot of fun. I think most people would agree that you're out of your mind, and I'm completely on point the whole time.
And to the point that I gotta tell a story that today, I mean, well, a couple weeks ago, there was one of them about throwing a golf club. And I told a story about how when I was younger, I threw a club and I hit, you know, my playing partner.
Why are you just glossing this over? This is a big story.
It's a big story. Do we need a better setup to that? Do you want to start
over? Fine. The whole thing was, have you ever thrown a club and he's over there drinking away and then he admits to doing it? Please continue.
Okay, so I had hit my playing partner and high school friend in the back of the head. And today I actually saw him. We work near each other and we see each other every now and then. And I saw him and he was walking way ahead of me. I couldn't catch him, but I took a picture of him, circled it, and sent it to Hawk and Dan. I was like, remember the guy I was talking about? That's Matt right there. That's the guy I hit the noggin.
All right, two things. First of all, was he walking way ahead of you after he saw that you were behind him, or was he looking for a golf club in your hand?
He was probably worried I had something ready to throw.
So here's the best part. Me being as aloof as I am, you say the name to me via text, and I'm like, I should know this name. So I'm like Googling the name. Like, why can't I figure this out? And then it completely dawned on me who you were talking about. I'm like, oh, that's so much better. And your final commentary was, I really wish I had a skateboard, which we would know would not end well. You say you're a better golfer or skateboarder?
You know, skateboarding is something I have never mastered. I'm absolutely terrible at it. Terrible. I can ski. I can't snowboard. I can't skateboard. Anything where I've got to put 2 feet on the same board at the same time. Yeah, it's a recipe for disaster.
I mean, based on the number of strokes you're demanding in our upcoming match, it seems like you're a better skateboarder.
Well, I don't know. Maybe. How many points? How would we get like strokes skateboarding? Do we ask for points? What do we ask for? What kind of competition is this?
Knee pads, first of all, maybe a helmet. those would be your handicaps, or you become, yeah. I mean, it's do we deal with this now? Do we wait for a time when Hawk's a part of this as well, Ryan, or do we just pretend like this didn't happen and that the pending match of Papalotopus is upon us?
Papalotopus?
I was going to pick another word. I knew it wouldn't end well, being that we're, somewhat actively listened to. So,
yeah, you know what? I would love to discuss it with you and Hawk one day and before it actually happens, if we can, and just talk about how many strokes we're getting. But I think I saw you say seven aside and then three floaters, but yeah, I don't know. I might have read that wrong.
Let's talk about the handicap system. I think it's an interesting debate. We're coming from slightly different placements on the handicap spectrum, if you will. So in the case of me, I tend to give strokes. And in the case of you, you tend to receive them. And in the case of us, you tend to want to receive a lot of them. In fact, it doesn't seem like the handicap is particularly relevant. It's like, don't look me up. I just need this many has been like the theme of our discussions. Is that fair?
Yeah. Let me negotiate my strokes.
Yeah, don't worry about what Jin says. Jin is wrong.
We don't need any information to go off of. You're a good golfer. I'm a not so good golfer.
Who shot a 78 to wrap his 2004 up, by the way.
Yeah.
2024.
Yeah, that's right. I was really proud of that round.
I mean, it's scary. It's sitting right there. You're going to be soft capped in no time.
I'm going to have to really shoot some high scores coming out here in a few weeks just to make up for that one.
So let me ask you, when you play with the buds, or you just do anything that has a handicap connection to it, I assume you enjoy that part of the process, right? Like having that sort of equalizer is a good thing for you.
You know what? Where I used to really come across it was during league play. And, you know, the last couple of years, it was me and my father were partners. Me and a cousin of mine were partners before that. And there's a lot of really, the league is mixed pretty good, but we're usually like towards the upper echelon of teams. And there's been times where we've had to give two strokes a hole for nine holes, which is brutal. So when you see that and having lived through that, I could feel your pain. It really upset my father more than it upset me. Because he's 74, 70, going to be 75 years old here soon. And he's like, I'm not that good of a golfer. Why the heck do I got to give up to all people? Dad, look at this kid. These guys don't get off the tee. They take four shots to get to. Yeah, you drive it 180 yards. It takes them four shots to get there. Like, those are legit bad golfers that need the pops.
Okay.
It's still frustrating, though, when you're playing a par five or a par three and you're giving up two. On a par three,
and they hit that one miracle shot off the tee, like suddenly all their problems are gone.
And it doesn't even need to be like a great shot. Like, they could just be up around the green. They don't even need to be on the green, around the green, and they get, you know, bogey, and they're like, ah, birdie, there we go.
How about that? That's crazy. How about that? How'd you do? I had a net par, a par net par.
That's right.
That's one of my favorite things. Listen, I love the handicap system for what it is when it works, especially, you know, I play most of my golf at one golf course that I'm super fortunate to be a member of. And in that case, most people play from the same set of tees, or they build their handicap off one set of tees. So when you go to play a game with them, it's really quite fair. I mean, their last 20 versus your last 20, usually it's pretty balanced. And then, of course, you use the suggested percentages when you play different games like Shamble or Best Ball or something like that. So I love that component of it. I am so fond of the ability that we can all come together and play a match. And you know, there's a level of understanding that, like, if you're asking for one shot per hole, or in your case, seven shots per nine, I mean, there's an underlying reality that exists here that, you know, if we played straight up, it probably wouldn't go so well for one of us.
Yeah, I think we've done that before.
Okay.
It did not turn out well.
So, but the point is, the idea of the handicap system is to balance, and on any given day, the intent there is that a very skilled player can play someone who's maybe a mid cap or a high cap, and both have an opportunity to win on that day. Where I get really lost in this is, well, I mean, it's twofold. First of all, the Jin system sucks, and I welcome anyone from that group to come on and debate me on this. It has no concept of distance. It has no concept of variable play. It just doesn't work from a traveling perspective. It doesn't work from a distance variant perspective. It's just not good enough. And when you have like all this craziness, example, there's THP events all the way through the year. Sometimes a guy comes in and plays lights out because he plays a hard golf course from a big distance. Other times someone will come in, plays a short course with short distance or a easy course with short distances and just gets, you know, beat on by these tough golf courses. And it's like, man, I wish there was a better way to do that. But at the same time, there has to be an understanding that like that balance doesn't always exist there. And that there's a level of frustration that goes into that.
Yeah, no, there definitely is. And I think when you talk about THP events and you change the format up a little bit, you can really mask somebody's weakness depending on, you know, what it is. So for me, I'm not a great driver of the golf ball. I can get around. I'm not super wild, but I'm not super long either. It's probably the weakest part of my game is just getting off the tee. And so when we play a course like Ballyhack, you know, I can kind of swing more freely because I know my partner is a much better driver of the ball than me. And when I'm playing my best, I'm a pretty good iron player. So if you put me in a good position, I'll usually hit a, you know, an above average iron shot. And then if I can ever putt, then, you know, the score will look a lot better than the handicap will. But if I'm playing that course on my own ball and no safety net, I mean, that number could be substantially larger than what my cap would be.
I thought for sure you're going to make a combined score comment there just to really ruffle the feathers of some folks who might be listening in.
You know, it's funny. I was looking back at the combined score of last year and we started off not great. I think we were plus 4 or 5 through the first 4 or 5 holes. And then we ended up shooting plus 6 in combined score. And I take full blame for that because on 16, I took a double on 16 from the middle of the fairway, just kind of lost concentration and blasted one OB. But man, other than that, you know, combined score, we could have done that in plus 3, plus 2. That would have been nice.
Maybe I mean,
do that again this year.
I'd be looking for the audit at that point. Just saying, Ballyhack is not polite. It is not conducive to highly strong play from anyone that goes out there.
Yeah, the key to that course, and people have asked me, and I always say the best thing you can do is know your number, know your distances.
Hidden hope.
Because there's like elevation change. There's so much elevation changes that it's, you know, like 5, you've been there, 5, mm-hmm. that uphill approach. If you're 2 yards short, you're going to be looking back at like a 70 yard pitch shot back up the hill,
which is no easier than the last shot you hit.
No.
So, yeah.
So that's the biggest key for me, as I always tell people, try to know your numbers as much as you can at that course.
Well, here's the way I look at it, Dean, because there's a level of humility that goes into it all. Playing golf matches, regardless of whether it's with strokes or without, I mean, you have to go in with a relatively casual, I don't want to say indifferent. That's not the word I'm looking for, but you have to have a bit of humor in the process and knowing that it's not a perfect system. And especially when you're getting together from a different golf course, from different handicap constructions, there has to be a bit of humor that goes into it. And here's where I get really stuck. And this is what, if you guys go and look at me lose my mind during a short on Instagram or wherever it was posted, this is what it really boils down to. If I hand over like umpteen strokes, like if I look at the card and it looks like a bunch of, you know, dots, like a madhouse of dots on the card, and they're only on your card, not mine. Like, I can't deal with ego when it comes to losing a match like that. Now, don't get me wrong. I am all for the shit talk that goes on during the match. I love that part of it. I think it's hilarious. But once it's done, like, unless you beat me straight up, even that, I'll put an addendum on this. There's not really a time where I want to play competitive golf with handicaps where people come at me afterwards like they've, you know, accomplished greatness by taking me down or something like that. The ego I cannot deal with. I really want to hear your thoughts on this because I know it's kind of stemmed into something else. But I'm really curious what your take is on all that.
I'm letting you know I'm coming after you.
Well, I don't care, dude.
No, I get it. Like, nobody wants to be, especially if it seems like there's funny business. I'll say it like that. You know, like, you know, there's the guy that says he's the 10 handicap, but he's really a 6, and you can tell he's a 6. And he snipes you because of the dots on the card. Yeah, you know, you don't want to hear from that person. But if there's a 20 and he plays, you know, like an 18 that day, that could legitimately be, you know, a good day for him. And unfortunately, you're in the spot where, you know, if you're playing off of a, let's just say a 1, and you shoot a 76, 77. Then yeah, that's going to be, you know, you're going to be toasted in that match. That's not going to work out. And for that guy, you could imagine that he would probably be chirping a little bit.
But The during the thing is fine, because then you start to have a little bit of fun saying like, oh, that's a par net par, that's a birdie net birdie, like the little things where it can be quite humorous to go through and you know, jaw at each other. But it's like the post round stuff. Like if you're walking around with your chest puffed up, like I imagine your dad, as you've already referenced him, these dudes who get two strokes a hole suddenly think they're the best golfers on the planet after taking you down. Like that's such an awful feeling. Like not only did I concede these pops to you, but now you feel like you're better than me. Like what a horrible feeling.
Yeah, it kind of is. But get ready, because if Hawk and I win this match, we're going to let you know about it for years to come.
Well, I'd love to give you guys two strokes per hole so that you can like really take me down.
But, oh, I'm game. Everybody just heard that.
I want it to be so lopsided that like you guys have won before we even tee off on the 10th. We had a lot of good side game ideas, like play from the tips and get an extra bunch of strokes or something like that, or you guys could shamble. I love the idea of combined score. I think you'd do terrible at that, so I'm totally in for it. You know, we'll have a blast. But here's the other side of it. I know you guys are going to have fun the whole time. I know I'm going to have a blast the whole time. And when it's over, we're going to laugh. We're going to have a drink, and we're all going to feel better about it because it was a good time. And that's really just not what I'm talking about. I don't have room for ego in golf. I see it at my home course. I see it in different places. Hell, I saw it last night at a golf store of all places. And I just, I'm so that's over crazy. Ego, man. It's like, dude, first of all, if I'm better than you, shut up. And genuinely speaking, like just don't bother. But here's the way I've always looked at it. I'm nowhere near what I used to be as a player. My handicap confirms that. But even when I was playing my best, I knew damn well there are levels to this shit. Like I go down the street to a local am, I'm the worst player there by a good margin. I start to try and mess around like some of these mini tours. There's always going to be someone who's significantly better than me. So for me to have an ego to someone at my course, what's the point?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, so stop having an ego towards me. Don't tell me my stuff don't count. Let's go.
I think it all counts, man. As many as you need to feel better. I know you need that pick me up. That 78's not going anywhere all year long. It's going to sit there.
It's just going to sit there, man. It might sit there for 4 years. Who knows?
So you need some momentum.
I do. I need a little boost. I'm going to need a little help. And well, I'm going to take all the strokes I can get. As many as Hawk will negotiate. He is a much better negotiator than me.
I don't think that's true. I don't think that's true at all.
Although I will say at one point he was just like, yeah, we'll do four a side. And I was like, dude, what are you talking about? Stop.
Well, we'll have to update you guys. I'm sure it'll be a conversation on the forum when it does happen. I tried to add a Montanan into my team and it wasn't, no one is hearing that at all. Even when I included combined score, which is kind of disappointing. But yeah, we'll bring more about that. And I'm sure if you really want to see more of it, just hop on the THP forum. It's apparently the most important topic going on around right now, but, yeah,
you never know what's going to be the hot topic of the week. And apparently that has become, that's one of them.
Well, that's what happens when all the tours are so disheveled that unless it's a significant venue, no one wants to talk about it.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, but we did just come off the Players Championship.
Yeah, let's talk about the Players, dude, since we're done beating the incredibly... I don't even know if I can say that. Screw it. Beating the dead horse of handicap conversation. I really enjoyed the Players this year. Did you watch it?
I did. I watched a bunch of it. And, you know, normally we talk and I watch a lot of tour golf. I just haven't this year. It's not because of the fields or anything like that. It's just... life. And that's okay. You know, now my son is five now, he kind of controls the TV, so golf isn't on as much, but like, you know, Danny Go is on 24 hours a day.
Okay.
But no, I watched a lot of it. I thought the course, you know, with the conditions, the course played tough, and it was kind of fun to see the final day Rory make a charge back, see JJ Spawn, you know, try to hang on, and came up, what do you want to say, half an inch short of, you know, $4.5 million on Sunday afternoon.
Yeah. Well, the putt on 18 brutal. From Rory that lipped in, and everyone's like waiting for him to you know, had that monumental failure that everyone can talk about on Monday morning, and instead we're watching a playoff because of it. That's pretty interesting. I know there was a lot of conversation surrounding the 17th and how versatile and exciting that hole is. I think it's well met. It's a very fair point that is one of the most interesting holes on the tour. Do you have like another one or two you can think of that have the same sort of prestige?
I think number 10 at Riviera to me is one that, you know, was it 16 at waste management, but that's a different type, that's the hard part,
right?
Because like, that's not the same as 17, and it's not the same as 10 at Riviera. I mean, it's a party hole.
We had a thread on THP where the question was asked, is there a better hole on tour? And I think the interesting part about the 17th at Sawgrass is it's an amazing venue to sit and watch. It's an incredibly challenging hole for the players, especially when the wind's up, which it was very much up this weekend. I mean, just ask JJ how the wind was on Monday. Oh. He'll probably talk to you into next week. But what you don't have at Riv 10 is the fan aspect. It's harder to watch that. What you don't have at the Waste Management 16th is the challenge aspect, because it's stadium, which of course makes it hard, but the challenge of the hole is not particularly significant to any other hole on tour. So those are the ones that came to my mind quickly, but like, does any other hole on tour have that same combined experience?
Yeah. I'm trying to go through some of the stops in my head. I mean, some of the bear trap holes, I want to say 17 out of those three, maybe. I don't think it's not at that level. I mean, we're probably, you know, a little bit below, you know, 15 at par four, not a par three, 15 at TPC River Highlands, that drivable par four that, you know, the left side shaves down into the water. But that one, again, it's not a difficult scoring hole. It's usually one of the easier scoring holes of that week, but it's an exciting hole to watch because of where it is. You know, there's always an eagle opportunity looming for somebody to jump up late in the round for the leaderboard. So, I mean, you could maybe include that one. Yeah, you know, I'm struggling to kind of pick one out that's not at a major venue.
It's impressive when you think about it, what that hole is. And listen, I'm not saying the rest of Sawgrass is a slouch, but it seems like to be a memorable experience, to be a storyline venue, you have to have those elements. And frankly, it's sandwiched between some pretty challenging holes. Like 18 is terrifying at Sawgrass, but somehow 17 gets talked about more. Like 18, if you hit it left, you're in the water, done and dusted. If you hit it anywhere other than that, it's going either into the trees straight or, you know, into a gazebo on the right side. Like there's just no win there.
And the crazy thing on 18 to me, now I've never played the course. I know some THPers have, and we had an event down there with Mizuno several years ago. I don't know how I would want to tee off on 18.
I think the answer is you wouldn't.
Like, you know, try to play a draw, but my fear is always the miss is to the left. Mm-hmm. So obviously that is not going to set up great for me. And then tee off left and try to cut it back to the right. You're starting off over the water. That's not great. Dan, you remember we played Bay Hill maybe 6 or 7 years ago now.
Yeah.
And you remember the one par five there, everybody kind of aimed over the water. And I think you have a picture of me. Where am I aiming? Dead right at the bunkers to cover as little water as possible.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's fun, man. And I've watched a fair bit of YouTube golf as well. Mostly it's like the really highly skilled players going to play these incredible venues. I've enjoyed it immensely because you get that sort of added layer of these courses that maybe they're still above, you know, our pay grade and skill, but there is a level of access that exists there as well that it seems a little bit more in our realm, which is fun.
Did you watch the Creator Classic that they had?
You know, I didn't. I was told it was like 3.5 hours long, and that's a lot of YouTube video to watch.
It's true.
For what is it, like 8 or 9 holes or something like that?
Yeah, I think they just played the back nine.
I'm a big fan of a couple of the guys that were involved. I don't really care about some of the others. It was a weird mix, but I'm glad it's happening. I'm glad that connection's being made, and I hope it continues, because frankly, it's good to see it all tie in together. And considering how, for lack of a better word, hapless the tour currently is, it's nice to have that collaboration to connect the two dots.
Yeah, and you know, YouTube Golf is gaining in popularity. I mean, it's already popular, but you could look at some of the subscribers that these people have and the audience they have. It's huge. So I think this was, I could be wrong on this, I think it's the second Creator Classic they did. I know they did the one at East Lake last year. A lot of the same faces, and what, Grant Horvat took the victory this time around. It's interesting to kind of poke around on YouTube and see how each one frames the experience of doing it, because they're all very different. I mean, you have Gabby Golf Girl, who's, I want to say she's what, like a 16 or 17 year old kid, who she does a lot of videos of her playing with D1 golfers, which is kind of neat. So anybody who's a little younger audience might really get into her stuff. But then you have, you know, the Bryan brothers that are out there, and obviously Grant Horvat, like we talked about, and Fat Perez. They all have their own little niche in the market, and they really draw a lot of attention. So it's cool to see them in one spot, try to have them go out and have some fun. And it's just bringing some attention to the game and courses maybe that are lacking right now. Not that Sawgrass is that, but the attention to the game that could be lacking because of all the nonsense that's going on.
Well, let's talk about the nonsense, man. I mean, you know, there was, I guess the argument of having a five-year-old is certainly a good one, but it's not to say that if little man wasn't around, you'd still have that same sort of feverish perspective of the tour that you had a couple years ago. I think it's sort of convenient that the two exist side by side. And I know personally, I've really struggled to connect to it over the last couple years. I've made a pretty concentrated effort to get more involved with it, but at the same time, it just doesn't seem to have the same level of prestige that I loved back in the day. So what little golf, or whatever golf you have watched so far, does it feel different? Does it feel the same?
You know, the thing I'm trying to think of a good way to put it. The thing that misses the mark with me now is all of the different signature events. Because it's always been a tour in my mind of, you know, the haves and the have-nots in terms of the event schedule. And I think we saw that big time when they shifted the PGA Championship from August to May. You saw the Florida Swing that would get a really good showing for the Honda Classic and Arnold Palmer, and then they would fly off to Dallas or Houston to get, or Austin to get a match play in, and then come back and go to Tampa. And even those events would get, you know, pretty good to strong fields, because it was also the lead up to the Masters and guys needed to play. Now, the way it's done, you see it like the Honda Classic field. I mean, that event went from being a really good strong field to who's out there playing? It's rough. You know, the event in Tampa that's going on this week actually has a pretty decent field, but it's nowhere compared to what we saw the previous 2 weeks with Arnold Palmer and the Players, because those are signature events. So that kind of bugs me a little bit, because I used to like to see how some of these guys would play certain courses, and you'd have some players that would go to courses that weren't the signature event, but they liked the venue. And now it seems like the incentive for them to go do that isn't there as much, because it's not the big money item, you know? So that makes me think that when I'm cruising the channels or I'm looking what's going on, if it's not a signature event, okay, my interest level has gone, you know, from here to here.
Your perspective aligns with some of the best players in the world.
Yeah.
Or the best players on the PGA Tour, I should say.
Best players on the PGA Tour. Yeah, absolutely. But I don't know. I don't know how you fix it, because even if you bring every single golfer back that went to LIV, I don't think it fixes the issue at all of the events being the haves and the have nots. It's going to be cool to watch some of the bigger events, but it's just gonna be like, you know, watching the majors. Now we all get jazzed up for those. Is it because of the players or is it because of the prestige? I don't know. For me, it's the tradition and the prestige, but you know, I'm an old fogey. So,
yeah, I mean, if you don't have the course and you don't have the players or you don't have a combination of the two, it certainly diminishes the interest. But I think the challenge is, and this is something that I've been dealing with for the last couple of years. I am so bored of having the purse size get shoved down our throat. The amount of money these guys are making, like, it's endless. I went on Twitter sparingly in 2024 and I said that weird 2024. And you know, it was like a Sunday evening or a Monday morning. I can't remember what it was. And it was like every single friggin' tour had a post saying, oh, they just made this much money winning this. It's like, you barely even mentioned who won. All you want to tell us is how much they won. Like, what does that do for me sitting at home here in Ohio? Like, why do I care how much money these people are making? I'm thrilled that there's a level of healthiness to it, that the purse sizes are significant. And let's be honest, they're incredibly significant. But if they're so fortunate and they're making so much money, they don't even have to play. Like, why do I care?
That has been a long time pain point for me with the FedEx Cup and winning the FedEx Cup, because it was always who's going to take home the $10 million purse. And then that number just kept escalating. Okay, cool. So I'm watching a guy who won five times on tour before the money got absolutely crazy. I'm watching a guy who won, you know, five times on tour, and we're watching Jason Day versus Jordan Spieth that year. They both had a bunch of wins going in. It's like, which one takes home the $10 million? they both won $9 million at that point on the season. Does it really matter? Is that what's going to get me jazzed up? Which one takes home an additional $10 million?
Right.
That's the biggest thing for me. And that's one of the turnoffs to me for LIV, because they talk about money, a lot of money that these guys get paid. Cool. Great for them. It's awesome. Every time they win, like you mentioned on Twitter, there's a little graphic that says Bryson DeChambeau just takes home $14 million. Oh, all right.
Sure.
Like it doesn't do it for me. The money stuff, to me, money in a way really ruins a lot of sports.
Yeah. I mean, we're certainly seeing that with a couple other sports we're quite passionate about, which is, yep, you know, painful. And it all circles back to the ideas. I don't want these guys to struggle, and I like, monetarily, I want them to be successful, no different than I want myself and my family to be successful. But it gets to the point where it's like, they win one time and they can put their feet up and coast for the next 20 years and be fine. Like, that's insanity. And
well, the stat the other day was Tommy Fleetwood cracked $25 million on the PGA Tour and won an event.
Yeah.
So, like, he's a great, plays a lot of golf, you know, but all right. So were things really that bad? Charles Howell III for a long time was like a top 5 or 10 career money winner. And he has what, 2 wins on tour?
Dude, it was like the ultimate top 25 guy, you know?
Yeah. So how bad was it? The greed of things just gets it gets uncontrollable, and it just I don't know, it leads things down a path that don't get me excited.
No, I'm trying to think of a way, because obviously there's major prestige. The guys still seem to want to win those, but it comes down to the question of, other than this outrageously big paycheck they're getting, I mean, second place just netted over $2 million this last week, and I know it's the players, but like, second place. You go to a Monday finish, you lose, and you're not upset because you just won $2.7 million. Like,
yeah.
Oh no, is that image or that one part of Zombieland where Woody is he's wiping his eyes with $100 bills, crying? Like, that's exactly what I was thinking about. Is just like, who gives a shit? I just won a crap ton of money. It's like, what a great way to lose.
Yeah, I wake up on a Monday, take what, six full swings at a golf ball and walk out with $2.7 million. Yeah, that's not a bad day's work.
Not bad. But what's interesting about this whole discussion is it's so good at the top, but then you go down 200 positions and, you know, maybe it's not so good. 300 positions, 500 positions, whatever the number is, at some point down the depth chart, gets pretty brutal for these guys. So it's like, you know, maybe create some healthiness down the depths, maybe add some of that content, you know.
And they're limiting the tour cards that are going out now. They're dropping it down. It used to be 125. Now it's 100. I mean, it's not, it's to me, that's just like, all right, it's not going to get any better for that guy down there. And I know Rory, you know, said play better to some of those guys, but which I get, but man.
Yeah, Rory seems to say what works for Rory at any given time, which is like the most irritating part of him, I think, that could possibly exist. And not that he'll hear this, but, you know, come on, man. Like, understand that it's not that easy for everyone else. Understand there's a process to this, and every one of those dudes matters. Every one of those dudes, every person watching matters. It's like Morikawa last week, basically saying, you know, I don't owe anyone anything. Well, actually, you kind of owe everyone everything. Yeah. So, man, it's tough. I don't know where I stand on the whole live thing. I'm so numb to it now. Like, there's so much damage that's been done. You got Scheffler speaking out, which is ridiculous because Scheffler doesn't want to speak out, but he's saying the same thing we're all thinking about. Like, what do you think about his thoughts?
I agree with him. And, you know, it's something I've been saying kind of on here whenever we talk about it. Things were good. People left. Things got crazy. And a lot of the chatter was coming from the people that left. And I'm at the point where, look, if you're going to make your decision to do something and go, yeah, we'll just say go against the grain, then you can't be like, oh, you know what? I want to be included with these things. You made the choice. You took money. That's fine. And I don't hold it against anybody. Like, Dustin Johnson took what, $100 or $150 million. Cool. That's good. He was one of my favorite players to watch on the PGA Tour. Absolutely loved watching his game. He would mash the ball when he developed a little bit of a short game. He would knock it on. And if he got the putter rolling, he was unbeatable. When he was playing like that.
I thought you were going to say you related to his flat stick game a lot.
Yeah, I did. I even tried that spider putter because of it. Didn't work so well for me. But he was so excited for me to watch. And then if you watch him, you didn't know if he was, you know, you turn on the TV, you didn't know if he was plus 17 or minus 17. He didn't show that stuff. And I liked watching the way he played. He left. I've seen him only hit golf shots in majors. He's not a guy I would actively seek out to watch, but he was a guy that I really enjoyed watching. And that's how it is all of them.
Are there guys that have replaced that for you?
That I really enjoy?
Well, I think the challenging part, and maybe we were spoiled, is there were a number of guys who kind of did it their own way. I mean, it's not too hard to figure out. You put DJ swing or Furyk swing or, and even like a Sergio or Phil swing, you put that with a like hide the face type of thing, just show like the kinetics of the move. Everyone knows who it is. It's not hard.
Everyone knows
out.
What Bubba Watson looks like when he hits.
Bubba's a really good example. There were this just level of uniqueness before they even talked. Yeah. And now the uniqueness on tour is like, what stupid apparel Jason Day is going to wear from Malbon this week.
Like that. What Melbourne apparel is getting banned this week.
Yeah.
And is Scotty Scheffler going to fall down mid swing?
Like Scheffler is, I would assume Scheffler is one of those guys, and Scheffler's move is so incredibly unique. You can't help but watch it. It doesn't hurt that he is outrageously good at golf. It doesn't hurt at all that he's at that level. But he's the one guy I can think about right off the top of my head who has that crazy move. We were getting that out of Rom. Rom had a really interesting move. It's a little bit Finau-esque, like the short backswing, crazy powerful. I just don't feel like there's enough uniqueness out there that make people stand out without their mouth or their play.
Yeah, and when you think about, you know, the bring in the inclusion of Full Swing, which is a way to introduce other players to, you know, golf fans, or even not strictly golf fans, just people who want to watch stuff on Netflix. You still watch them and you're just like, yeah, okay. Like Joel Damon was a good one. He was a personality that I think most of us who followed the PGA Tour, we knew what kind of personality he was.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he was kind of like the hidden gem. And then everybody saw that in Full Swing. And his game hasn't been as good lately.
Chris.
So you don't see him on. He's still good. I should say that.
Yeah.
Hasn't been as sharp lately. So you don't see him as much on TV. You don't see him as much on tour. And okay, so there goes one of like the feel good stories that you want to root for.
Well,
it's really hard to promote the PGA Tour right now.
It is, man.
It really is.
Let's do this because we've been sort of harping on him for a bit. Let's look at the positives. We have the Masters coming up in April. We have a couple massive golf courses on the docket for this year. We've got Quail Hollow PGA Championship. Oakmont's coming back. I think that's U.S. Open. Royal Portrush is on the 2025 schedule. Those are healthy venues. Does this make a big difference? Is this the wave we need, especially April, May?
The thing is, I'm not a big fan of Quail Hollow as a major venue, but it's a cool course to watch. I mean, Wells Fargo's been there for a long time. It's a good course to watch. Obviously, Augusta National, everybody knows Augusta. And Oakmont is probably the U.S. Open venue in many people's minds.
Wow.
I mean, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Oakmont is a really good layout. It's very different. I mean, they took out all those trees from when it was there and when Tiger lost to Angel Cabrera. We saw that when DJ won it. What was that, 2016, I'm going to say? And that's the venue that, for me, it's like, all right, you're getting back to U.S. Open golf.
Okay, so that's what's circled on the calendar?
It was Pinehurst last year. I'm not going to lie. I'm not a Pinehurst guy.
The
problem is I watched like the U.S. Open at Pinehurst, and we've done it now 2014 and this past year. And both my watch, I'm like, you know what? That gives me no desire to ever go play that course.
It's burnout.
It's just one brown mess. Cool.
Yeah.
But people that go there love it. It's just, I don't know. To me, when I think of U.S. Opens, Oakmont, and I know we got off the beaten path, Oakmont, Shinnecock, Wingfoot, that kind of test.
Do you have a guy outside of Scheffler who you'd put the money on this year?
Oh. How far outside do you want to go?
Well, we can do whatever you want. And the interesting part about Scheffler is, you know, he's coming from injury. So it's like it's like he either just finds instant recovery brilliance and takes over, or you start to look at some of these secondary conversations. I've heard that the guys on LIV still know how to play golf. That's the rumor that's going around.
That's what I'm told.
Rory just won the fifth major. So it's like, does he finally figure it out at Augusta? There's so many little bitty notes that's like, who do we lean on? Who is the guy?
Yeah, there's story. I mean, you got Xander. Xander, he's been coming back from injury. He's starting to play a little bit better. You know, he's won two of the last three majors. You know, people kind of forget that he won two majors last year, which is pretty awesome, but it was overshadowed by, you know, the year Scotty had. You know, he had Oberg, who competed last year, going in on Sunday, didn't have the Sunday he wanted. And he's been playing some all right golf, although missed the cut at the Players, if I have that right. A guy that I was thinking about, usually I pick Morikawa because I love his iron game. And I think at Augusta, you know, good iron game. I'm not going to pick him, and this will be the year he probably.
You don't know him. You don't know him.
Yeah, I don't know him anything. The guy I was really thinking about was Wyndham Clark.
Okay.
I know he had a good first round. He had a good first. Yeah. Well, you know, going outside of like the few favorites, he was the guy I was kind of thinking. You know, watching the way he just mashes the ball during TGL, and I remember saying it on the forum that he could be a star of that league just because his numbers are always so ridiculously strong. But then seeing him pull out of the Players Championship, that kind of gives me a little bit of pause on him. But I think he is a guy that could, you know, turn it on, and that course could suit him. He's got a major under his belt. I don't know. I haven't made a Masters prediction yet. I'm not going to do it right now, but there's some guys that I would look at.
What odds would you give Justin Thomas winning a major this year?
I mean, he's going back to Quail Hollow where he won his first one. So JT, you never know what you're going
to do. Isn't that a weird one? He's had a really interesting couple of years.
He really has.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. He could pick up a major this year. I don't see it.
Just sneak in and steal
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Just like he did at against Mito Pereira when he turned into a meathead and put it in the water.
The craziest swing I've ever seen.
Man.
Oh, I can relate to that so much. So can you, driver off the
I think a guy maybe off the beaten path a little bit would be Sepp Straka.
Okay.
Would be a guy that I could think of could sneak into a major this year.
Here's the one guy I'm really curious about this year. And I know the last time that I watched him was in the lights and his partner had a big Reebok jacket on after getting thumped by the team PGA Tour or whatever you want to call it. What do you think Brooks Koepka does this year?
He's always a guy you think about.
I've heard he likes majors.
He likes majors. Can I say, and we talked about this before in the past, he was like the perfect guy to go to live because of PGA Tour. He didn't care about any of the other events. He just cared about the majors. So yeah. If he went to live, didn't matter. He still was playing in majors. So he's just making more money. It was okay for him. You know, he's made a couple of runs at Augusta, you know, and he's seriously a PGA championship kind of player too. He could win one. Why not?
You know, I'd love to see this year. I've been thinking a lot about it. I want to see Akshay Bhatia win something, like a big one.
Yeah.
I think that'd be really fun.
I was really pulling for him at the Players.
Yeah.
I really was. He's kind of fun to watch.
There was a moment in time, and he's had those moments. He had it, what is that, Pebble, as an amateur, very young, like really putting on a show. It's just like he's there in that moment, like a flash, and it, I don't know, it puts it all together. It'd be a really fun story to see him get that one.
Yeah, that'd be a good one. I'd be down for that. Same thing with Tom Kim. I'd be good to see Tom Kim.
Yeah, absolutely.
I want to see him win the Masters at some point in his life because I think the patrons go absolutely bonkers for him.
Why do you say that?
I think he's got so much flair in attitude, and I know the name Seve gets dropped around Masters time like at nauseam, but that's what I feel like. He can play off of the crowd so much and get people going. I think that would be a great spot for him to win a major.
Gotcha. I had a couple of actual golf related questions for you today, really? Or tonight, technically, if you're down to answer them. I'm curious, the five-year-old takes up most of the time, but I know that also means some golf course time. Do you have any specific golf goals for this year?
Yeah, I want to play more.
Yeah. Well, it's going to help. He's into it, right?
Shoot more 78s. He's all into it. He got a new set of clubs for his birthday. He's been hitting the ball in the garage. It's pretty good. So we're looking for some more family golf this year, which would be nice.
So play more, but your game, anything?
For my game, I'd like to just keep trending in a positive direction.
Scores, not handicap, right?
Scores.
wait. Scores. Ball striking, not handicap. That's what
we need. Well, scores, but not reported scores.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. You're one of those. I get it.
You know, one of those guys where all of a sudden you just drop that extra ball at 18. And you're like, oh.
Unlucky. Oh, that's a three putt. Dude, you scooped it. how about the putting game? Where are you at there?
So the putting game, people probably know because, you know, I'm important that I've played a Mez One Max for 2.5 seasons and it's worked out well. I'm going to be making an early season switch.
Oh,
to a square to square number 7 shape from Odyssey. I'm pretty excited about giving it a shot. It's I was a guy who used to be a revolving door at the putter spot in the bag. It hasn't been like that for the last two plus seasons, but I'm going to give it an early go.
Okay.
To the point that when we go to staff retreat, my plan is to only bring one putter with me and just roll with it the entire time. And let's just see what happens.
I would much prefer you bring them all. I think that would be healthier for my potential outcome.
There's a chance I bring four or five bags. So,
Oh man. Is there one product this year so far that you've seen that you're just absolutely incredibly excited about and love to talk about to people?
The one that I'm really in on still is the Cobra DS Adapt driver. Okay. I think Future Fit 33 is a great conversation. I think the product itself is really strong, but the adapter itself, trying to find ways to communicate to people how to use it if they don't, because if you look at it, it can be confusing. I mean, there's 33 options on it. So it could be a little daunting. I think the problem is, like, when you go into a fitting bay, you're going to have somebody that's going to try to explain it to someone for 15 minutes, say, here's your half hour booking. And then, you know, all of a sudden you're 10 minutes into it.
It's interesting you say that, because I actually just unintentionally fit our good friend Andy yesterday into new Cobra driver. And it was my first interaction with Future Fit 33. Prior to that, I'd not experienced it at all. Mm-hmm. We started with was A1, and we actually messed with the 10.5 and 12 degree heads. And within 5 minutes of me, between looking at the app, or not the app, just an image of the setup online, so it shows all the windows and the different settings and where it hits. Mm-hmm. Within 5 minutes, I figured out what the setting did, and then I cross-referenced that to what the actual thing said on it, and it was incredibly easy to figure out. What I think people will get wrapped up on is, like, trying to solve it like it's a Rubik's Cube, when in reality, you don't need to do both.
Right.
If your ball go high and it go left, then look down and right in the chart. It's pretty damn simple. And start there.
It should be simple.
And then eventually, if you want to get fancy, you can go to that setting and then figure out what it did to the club head. Loft lie. It's all written right there. I think it's remarkably easy to use. And I think anyone who has even a little bit of common sense can figure it out in a couple minutes. I didn't ask any questions. I didn't need anyone's help. My expertise would be that I've used an adapter on a driver before. that's the depth of it. What I think is crazy with that, Dean, is people get so wrapped up with this, like, different technology. They get so comfortable with something, they forget that there is a massive benefit to having 33 setting options, yeah, as opposed to, like, 8 or 6. Or in some cases back in the day, like 3. Like, why would you ever not want that? That's what I don't understand.
No, it's when we sat down with Jose and he went through the whole gambit on it, it was just like, yeah, it makes all the sense in the world. And then you compare it to, you know, we'll just say Cobra's last adapter, and you're like, man, mm-hmm, this is wild. It's so much more significantly fitting.
Oh God! There goes the episode. If anyone's still listening, they're gone now. My goodness!
I mean, we're 50 minutes into this; they're gone anyway. But you know, if you think about, you know, Cobra's old adapter was like one circle here, mm-hmm, and now if you look at their adapter now, it's like circle, 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 and then everything in between you can fit. It's mm-hmm, pretty awesome. That's still the product to me that's been the one that has my attention, and I'm going to try to see if I can get it in the bag in another spot outside of driver.
Interesting.
So okay. I'm thinking of maybe the 5 wood spot, because being able to drop it or raise it 2 degrees, I could probably fit it into whatever kind of bag combination I come up with.
That's a utility spot, Dean. You can't put a wood there.
Oh, well, right now it is an Apex UW, that counts, right?
No, it does not.
That's utility wood Apex.
We talked to Briska not too long ago. He said that's like a knockoff wood. So it's in a class of its own, I believe he said.
That's it's fair and Michael would know way more than me on that topic.
Presumably, so, yeah.
Yeah. I guess he's kind of smart.
Well,
I hope he doesn't watch the reel where I say fitting is bogus, because then he'll really be mad at me.
Well, yeah, I think you're not getting a Christmas card this year, but listen, we all take chances. You took the wrong one. Dean, you're the man, buddy. Thanks for coming on today. It was super fun to talk. I love that we can have casual conversations about the handicap system and about the tour. I think it's such a weird conversation still after all this time. And apparently we have a match coming up. So we'll be taking this to the forum, and hopefully you guys aren't too mean to me.
Yeah. We're going to see each other in the flesh. That's always exciting, Dan.
Terrifying. Just knowing that Hawk's a part of the conversation, phrasing it like that is horrifying. So
I'll have the Bloody Marys ready for you boys. Don't worry. Yeah,
I'll bet you will. You have any final thoughts to the folks today or no?
I don't. I'm excited. Golf is about to really get kicked off here. I'm hoping to get out, and hopefully everybody listening is already been out on the course this year.
You make a good point. Golf is here, and I'm pumped. I'm so sick of being in my house. Get me out of here. Yeah. Dean, thanks, buddy. Appreciate you. Great way to end the episode. I love that.
You want me to say something?
Yeah,
thank you for having me, Dan.
Got you, buddy. Hey, if you are playing golf this weekend, have a great time. Hopefully the connection you have with your playing partner is a little bit better than what Dean and I just had there. But if you are playing, have fun. Make it count. It's fresh in the year, or it's getting to be the worst time of year for the AZ boys. Good luck when the heat really comes. If you are playing golf, And you're playing with a buddy and he's not playing well, tell him he's good. Especially if his name's Dean and he wants a bunch of strokes, tell him he's really, really good so he get asked for less.
Offer your buddy some pops.
We'll see you guys next week.
Now it's time to send it over to Don Brown for this week's Shaft Education, brought to you by True Temper.
Hey everybody, Don Brown back for another week of education about shafts here at Shaft University. Question this week is, how do we manage all the different brands that we have here at True Temper Sports? So we have True Temper, we have Project X, we have Acro, we have Aerotech. What crossover it is, how do we manage all that? And it's actually pretty hard if you think about it, you know, to manage four different brands coming from one company, but we're lucky in that all those brands have different messaging and different products. So taking Aerotech out is the first one, it's really easy. All of our Aerotech product at this point is steel fiber, so that's its own technology. So you're not gonna see that technology in any of our other product lines, and it's a very unique product. Acra is all about breadth of product. So there are definitely some crossover maybe from Acra to Project X, but Acra covers all the fringes. For our fitters out there that use the Acra product, they might need that 80 gram A-Flex Fairwood shaft or a 50 gram double X shaft because they're fitting so many different players. So they have to have that really wide range. Certainly in the middle of their product line, there might be some crossover with our Project X line, but they get out to the fringes where Project X stays more up the middle. Project X, we have the two different lines in the graphite side, Hazardous and Denali. Hazardous for the aggressive tempos, Denali for the smooth swingers. On the steel shaft side, we have the Project X, the original in the blue, definitely for the strong swingers. But we've just introduced the red. That is for people looking for more of a mid-launch, mid-spin profile, a little bit smoother shaft. And then, of course, True Temper, really all about dynamic gold. You know, that is the gold standards of shafts. Still the most used shaft on the PGA Tour every week. A little bit more of a softer shaft that still produces a low spin versus a Project X. Project X for that really aggressive tempo, dynamic gold for more of a smooth swing. But at the end, really similar ball flights. From a marketing standpoint, they all have kind of different characters. Project X is more of our aggressive attitude, whereas True Temper is more of a traditional type marketing approach, traditional messaging. So hope that answers some questions about all of our various brands. Talk to you guys next week.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.